Good morning, Tucson, Arizona. Welcome to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger. Very excited to be here with you this wonderful Wednesday morning, April 23rd. Certainly that Chamber of Commerce weather rocking out there in the Old Pueblo right now. We have had an absolutely awesome week. Like, what a great time of year for Tucson. Great time to be outside. Love all that patio dining out there as well, too.
Easter weekend must have been perfect for outdoor dining at your restaurants.
Oh, without a doubt. We had a great farmer's market, Easter brunch. You know, like when Easter falls in late April like this, you can pretty much guarantee that there is going to be some great weather.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of
events. And as late as it was, the weather was surprisingly mild.
Yes. So, yeah. There's a lot of events going on this weekend, too. We're going to bring those up at the 8 a.m. hour, just the absolute metric ton of events that are happening in late April. Never really a shock, right? Because you know in late October and late April, these are the times of year you want to plan outdoor events. And so the Old Pueblo is going to be absolutely rocking this weekend coming up. We're going to talk about that at the 8 o'clock hour. We've got a great show for you today. I'm going to have Gabe Cordova in studios. He's the operating partner of the District Bites and Brew. They're opening up this week on the Campbell Corridor, perhaps the new restaurant row in Tucson. And after the 8 a.m. hour, we're going to have Justin Fitzsimmons from Uptown Burger and the Scordato family. But first, your food for thought and the four things you need to know while you start off your day in the Old Pueblo. It's not just high restaurant and patio season out there. It is, in the political world, signature challenge season. Something I know you get all excited about. I got a lot of signature challenge cards in the mail over here. And for those that don't know what that means that whether there's ballot initiatives or candidates running for particular positions, they have a statutory deadline to submit a number of signatures to get themselves on the ballot. That also leads a number of days for opposing candidates or other people of interest to challenge those signatures and get them off of the ballot. As we talked about last week with City Council candidate Jay Tolkoff, who's running for Ward 6, there's Wards 3, 5, and 6 are coming up this November. Ward 5 was of a real interest to us because current City Councilman Richard Fimbres has announced his resignation and retirement on May 5th. May 1st. The City Council may, as soon as May 6th, appoint somebody to temporarily take that position. And as of last week's show on The Morning Voice, it was a four-horse race. Well, my, how things have changed already. In signature challenge season, one of those candidates has been completely eliminated off the race, and a second one is facing a legal challenge for his signatures. And so as of Monday, which was the statutory filing deadline for signatures, candidate Chris Elsner is having his signatures challenged by Democrat challenger Jesse Lugo. Looking at this particular lawsuit in the filing, Mr. Elsner filed just over the statutory minimum number of signatures required to get himself on the ballot. He needed 252 and submitted 299. And there's a lot of challenges about whether or not those people were registered voters in the city of Tucson when they signed, and whether they simultaneously signed somebody else's petition as well, disqualifying them from signing more than one petition. And so if Mr. Elsner is removed, and it seems likely based on the facts presented in this lawsuit, and Mr. Fabian Dano Bettia was also took himself off the ballot after these signature challenges, we're looking at a two-horse race. It is the Democrat primary. It is going to be Selena Barajas against Jesse Lugo, winner take all in a major heavy title fight during just the Democrat primary. And because there's no Republican challenger, this one is over as of the beginning or middle of summer when that primary hits on, I believe, August 5th. And as such, like, there's going to be great interest in this particular race. So keep your eyes on the news this week because they'll announce the results of that lawsuit. It happens in a timely and expedited manner. We've seen signature challenges pop up in the past, most recently in both City of Tucson ballot initiatives. It happened in the constabulary races as well, too, last year. And, of course, infamously in the mayor's race just a couple of years ago as well, too. There doesn't seem to be any challenges right now on the other wards in Wards 3 and 6 that I can see right now. If anybody knows about anything else popping up on that, give us a quick call at 520-790-2040 is our call on line over here at KVOI. But it is certainly high signature challenge season. We're going to keep our eye on that one as we look for the gunfight that's going to happen in Ward 5 over there between Jesse Lugo and Selena Barajas. This plays into my next topic over here, and that's the turmoil that's happening with the RTA next, right? As you may or may not know, the RTA was a 20-year sales tax agreement signed in 2006. It adds a half-cent sales tax to pretty much everybody in Pima County, whether you're in the city of Tucson or unincorporated Pima County. That sales tax expires in July of 2026. You've heard ads on this station for RTA Next. They can't advertise it as a renewal of this tax. It has to be an all-new tax, hence the moniker RTA Next as opposed to RTA 2.0. And there is a lot of turmoil on the RTA board, including with, you know, the chair of this board right now, who's taken the ire of both the mayor and a number of Pima County Board of Supervisors. So all these changes that have happened in just the last couple weeks politically in Tucson have caused major storm clouds over the RTA, right? The resignation of Adelita Grijalva, removing her from the RTA board, and then Matt Hines moving into that position suddenly is calling for, you know, the RTA chair's, you know, performance
director,
review
yeah.
to happen just last week. Imagine, right? I sit on a number of charity boards, and normally my first week on a board, you just kind of shut up and listen, right? I know that's rare for me. I'm a talker out there. Love to talk to you guys. But normally you sit and you download for a while. You know what you do, you don't do when you get on a brand new board? Immediately challenge the chair for a performance review on your absolute first week in the position. So this seems planned. This seems like this was thought out for a while over here. And in the next 7 to 10 days, we're going to have a joint meeting of the RTA and the PAG, which is the Pima Association of Governments. And they're going to do a little review of the RTA chair's board. And there's going to be some real storm clouds as the city of Tucson is not happy with how the current RTA process is shaking out. They've got to put something on the ballot, of course, before July of 26. It was thought for a while that we'd be seeing the RTA vote happen in November of 25, the same time as these elections that we're going to have for Wards 3,
sure,
5, and 6.
Yeah.
Right? It would make a lot of sense. But now it's looking like that's not going to happen. And we're staring down the barrel of a March 2026 special election.
Grant, how much do those special elections cost?
Well, it's a little over $1 million.
$1 million.
$1 million over here. And so we may have a special election in March of 26 for all the marbles. Win and you're in, lose and go home, and the RTA vaporizes and is gone. That's actually really serious stuff for regional transportation. It's really serious stuff. Whether you're in the city of Tucson, whether you're in unincorporated Pima County, Marana, Saurita, Oro Valley, wherever, this is quite important. This really is going to dictate a lot of our economic future if we want to attract jobs, if we want to have better roads. So this is something that we should all be watching, because the city of Tucson is, quite frankly, just about ready to run off on their own. And as we know, they are not afraid to levy an extra half cent or cent sales tax on you in some capacity. So do watch what's happening on the RTA board and RTA next, because there are storm clouds in the future. As well in politics, as Matt brought up at the top of the hour, I tend to try to keep everything just local Tucson over here, but the state race really does have some interest for me. Yesterday, Donald Trump announced that he was co-endorsing Andy Biggs for governor. Mm-hmm. Now, you may have noticed back in December at a Turning Point event in Phoenix, right? Donald Trump sort of endorsed Karen Taylor Robeson for governor, right? And you know, kind of surprisingly set it out to the crowd and welcomed her. And that really got a lukewarm review from some right sides of the Republican Party, including Turning Point, who said, hey, we might have another horse in that fight. And within just a few weeks, current Congressman Andy Biggs announced his candidacy for governor. And now Donald Trump has essentially endorsed them both. What does that mean? Kind of waters down the endorsement a bit, in my opinion, and brings a lot of local interest into what would happen in CD5 with Andy Biggs resigning and running for governor. And former NFL kicker Jay Feely has announced his candidacy for Congress to take that seat. And so, like, just as the world turns here in both politics and professional sports and all these things sort of colliding, We've got a dual endorsement of governor over here. We'll work to get both Karen Taylor Robeson and Andy Biggs on this show at some point over here, have a few interviews with them and talk about what's going to happen in that gubernatorial race in 2026 as that one heats up. And finally, on a more local front, an interesting front, my favorite team in Tucson, the Tucson Roadrunners, have made the Calder Cup playoffs. Super excited to see that. If you got a chance to watch that game on Saturday at the Tucson Arena at the TCC, we squeaked by at the last minute over there to end up capturing the number 7 seed in the playoffs. And we're going to play starting tonight against the evil Abbotsford Canucks in a 3-game series. All 3 of those games will be in Abbotsford, right?
Okay.
The AHL doesn't move back and forth with a series like, say, the NBA or the NHL. You get, if you're the higher seed, you get the entirety of the home games. And those games are going to be this Wednesday, tonight at 7 p.m., Thursday at 7 p.m., and if necessary in this best of 3, Saturday at 7 p.m. You'll be able to see all of them on AHL TV, a network I'm sure Matt subscribes to over here as well, too.
It's worth every penny, Grant.
Keep your eyes peeled on this series, though. Of course, we're rooting for Tucson. And if we win, and I'm going to say if, of course we're going to win, we're the Tucson Roadrunners. When we win that series, we will get a home series on May 2nd and May 4th at Tucson Arena in the second round of the playoffs. So really, really looking forward to that one. Do root on your Tucson Roadrunners as they move forward in the AHL Calder Cup Trophy playoffs starting tonight. But don't go anywhere. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to have Gabe Cordova, owner, operating partner, general manager of newly opening The District on Campbell. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Grant Kruger on 1030 AM. The Voice, your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger, and we are joined live this morning in the KVOI studios by Mr. Gabe Cordova. If you don't know Gabe, he's the operating partner of The District Bites and Brew, opening up possibly as soon as this week at Campbell and Fort Lowell. Good morning, Gabe.
Morning, Grant. Thank you so much for having us. I appreciate it.
No, thanks for taking time out of your schedule to come in here and be on The Morning Voice with us. I know opening up a restaurant is no easy feat over here. Like, you are burning the candle on both ends. And so we just appreciate your time and sharing your story with us about what it's like opening up a restaurant on Campbell.
Anytime. Yes, absolutely.
Hey, so why don't you give us a little breakdown about your history and background? Do you have experience in the restaurant business in some capacity?
Nothing too crazy. When I was younger, I did some jobs at some basic corporate type restaurants, Olive Garden, Texas Roadhouse, things of that sort. Actually joined the military in 2008, did some time in the military. Once I got out, me and my brother opened up a gym here in town. We've been running that for about 9 years. And we just had the opportunity to take over the old Pastiche building recently. And we're really excited for that.
Yeah, that's a pretty interesting space with some history over there,
yes,
too. There's been a number of ownership changes, of course, at Pastiche. This is located at Campbell, just south of Fort Lowell,
yes,
on the west-hand side of the road. It's 3025 North Campbell Avenue, for those who are keeping score at home over here, right next to the Jalish Nail Center.
Jalish Nail Salon, yes, sir.
There's a cat cafe.
Cat right Lounge, yes.
Yeah, El Cat Jefe. Lounge over, yeah, there. El Jefe. We need to have her on here sometime for the Cat Lounge.
Oh, we'll set that up. They're awesome people. They're great people.
And you can buy running shoes next door at the running shop to work off your lunch.
Can we bring cats into the KVOI studios there, man? I don't know if there's some rules on this one. Are they service cats?
Well, if you put the service cat blanket over them, they're fine.
All right, perfect. I'm going to bring a service cat
there
in for
please.
Those.
Oh, bring man. It on.
So either way, this is a location where Pat Connors had Pastiche for many years, right?
Yes.
Award-winning, very well-loved restaurant that, you know, had received a lot of accolades, and he passed away, unfortunately, a number of years ago. And there were a couple different ownership changes on Pastiche after that,
yes,
no?
Yes, there was. And it's really cool that you bring up Pat Connors. One of the big things that we want to do is actually honor Pat Connors, what he was, a philanthropist. If he wasn't donating to charities, he was doing fundraisers. He was just such a phenomenal man, and I think we've kind of lost the story of what Pastiche was built upon. So we really want to bring that back. I know Pat Connors ended up selling it to a couple, didn't know them very well. And then, obviously a lot of people know the last owner or whatnot and what happened there. So we're excited to change up the narrative and bring back that Pat Connors memory.
I think that's great. It's an important restaurant space that sat empty now for a number of years, which was sort of surprising that one sat for 2 years, because there's a lot of restaurant activity happening on Campbell. I mean, right, across the street, you had major investments by the Fox Restaurant Corporation, right? Mm-hmm. Buying old Chicago and basically just blading a somewhat beloved local watering hole over there and building Flower Child and Doughbird.
Yes, yes. Absolutely. You know, it's crazy you bring that up because that's what we were gunning for. You know, the Pastiche, it's a legacy building right there on Campbell. Phenomenal location. You said it best. Campbell Avenue, the new restaurant row. It's just blowing up. I think Shake Shack is coming down the street from us. So, you know, we're a very big local community. Tucson is very big with supporting local. So when they took away Chicago Bar and then we saw Pastiche go out, you know, we knew there was something missing. We knew there was something missing on Campbell Road. Phenomenal restaurants to choose from. But we wanted to kind of bring back that local environment. And with our, you know, restaurant, we're going to kind of let it be ever changing. If the neighborhood has been so supportive, people knocking on our window, knocking on our doors. And, you know, if they're looking for more of a culinary experience, we eventually want to get into that. If you're looking for a little bit more of a watering hole like Chicago Bar, you know, we're all for that. So we're really going to allow Tucson and the community around us to kind of choose which direction we're going to kind of go full force on.
No, I think that's a great idea. I mean, I remember the warm reception for Old Chicago over there. They used to have some sort of beer passport where if you drank all these beers, you know, and stamped your passport, I think you got like a free liver transplant or something.
Oh,
I
would
like
have been great at that. Okay.
Right? So give us the rundown about what it's been like to start this restaurant over here. I mean, you had to take over an old space that had been through a couple of previous owners over here. And as restaurants sort of contract, right, when they start going backwards a bit, preventative maintenance is something that's often kind of left on the back burner, pun intended. And as such, there can be a lot of equipment problems and issues. Do you guys have some challenges with this one?
Oh, man, challenge after challenge. And I don't think people realize how much it takes to just get something off the ground. Once you jump through all the loopholes and all the kind of setbacks that you're already going to establish, then you're going to open. And then that comes with a whole nother, you know, set of setbacks, if you will. So, you know, we thought we were inheriting a little bit more equipment than we thought. Obviously, that's not the way it works. So we did have to replace a good amount. We gutted that building pretty well. There was a lot of work to do, but we're back on ground one and we're looking to kind of bring it back up to par.
Yeah, this isn't easy. For the average listener out there, you think like, well, this was an existing permitted restaurant before. Can't I just put a coat of paint on it, right? Everything, though, has to get brought up to 2025 code, particularly if the establishment has been closed for more than 6 months. What happens is anything that's grandfathered in, and that's legal non-conforming use, anything that was grandfathered in after 6 months is no longer grandfathered in, and it's all got to be brought up to code. Got to tiny grease trap, guess what? You're building a new one. Oh, got a hood that doesn't meet fire inspection. Guess what? You're spending $50,000 on a brand new one over here.
Yes.
Hey, those hand wash sinks that were sufficient for the last four establishments, yeah, we need to move those. I need one here and here and here. And that stacks up both in terms of expense and time as well, too.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was a whole lot of stuff. And obviously that building sat for a good 2 years. So there was a good amount of changes that we had to go through. We are going to be having our final inspection here within the next week. So hopefully we crossed all those boxes off and we're ready to rock.
That's awesome. Final inspection coming up this week. I know there's no stress like opening up a restaurant. I tend to lose 20 or 25 pounds every time we open up a restaurant. And I realize this is radio and you can't see me, but I cannot afford to lose 20 or 25 pounds, let me tell you. But that's the kind of mental toll that it can take on you as well, too, because there's just so many moving parts to this.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's just a really stressful situation in general, and it's going to be worth it. But it does take a certain type of person to be able to go through the struggles and the loopholes that go with opening a business, and not just opening a business. You know, it's great, and we get a lot of congratulations for taking over the space. But now we have to win. You know, now we have to bring something forth that the community will like, enjoy. You know, consistency with our food, good customer service. So I think that's when the real battle begins for us. We're pretty good with the health department in the city telling us we have to do this, that. We may not love it all, but I really think that the real work is going to begin once those doors open and we have to get those parts moving.
Without a doubt. Do you got operating hours in mind right now for the district?
Yes. So tentatively, we're probably looking Sunday and Monday. We are going to be open from 11 a.m. to, I believe, 8 p.m. Wednesday through Saturday, 11 a.m. till 10 p.m. Tentatively looking at doing a late night menu later on, but I'm jumping the gun. They're gonna kick my butt if they hear me giving future plans already.
No. We love to hear it over here, too. And I recognize that these situations are a bit fluid, too. We're talking about a business that hasn't quite yet opened its doors over here. But it's a great already success story to see an empty location turn into a vibrant new business that's going to employ a lot of people, a vibrant new business that's going to attract the kind of crowds that you want to see, right? So often in Tucson, we lack this infill development, right? These third or fourth generation spaces aren't always turning over and becoming restaurants. Instead, they're becoming 24-hour smoke shops and vape stores and yep. other things like that. And I don't think we need any more of those in the old Pueblo. I don't know about you, Gabe.
No, I think we got plenty of those, yeah.
Yeah, no shortage of those type of properties. And so it's great to see actual retail businesses opening up. People that are going to pay sales tax, people that are going to employ other Tucsonans yes. over here as well, too. Like, that's a pretty big leap of faith. Now, you've got some pretty heavy competition around you over there. You talked about Shake Shack opening up. There's a Chipotle in that shopping center yep. as well,
yep.
too.
Yep.
Right? So, like, there's a lot going on over there. Mauricio Fragoso Salon is over
yeah,
there. Mauricio's
right
my buddy. Yeah, he cuts me, you know, once about a month or so over
wow,
there. Great
yeah,
guy.
Yeah. Great like guy. So, yep. Yeah, no, there's a lot of, and what we take it as is, you know, we see a lot of these big organizations and restaurants coming in, and we almost take it as like, hey, man, you know, we did it right. We're in a good place. We're in a great location. You know, we're one of the local spots that's going to be kind of right next to some giants. But I think we'll do very well. Again, I really think the Tucson community really supports local people like yourself, Grant, you know, putting us on the air and doing things like that. It really helps us a lot. So we really appreciate it.
No, it's one of the things I love about Tucson is the way we do support local restaurants over the chains. And let's use that to take a quick break over here. Don't go anywhere. We're going to come back with another segment or two with Gabe Cordova, owner of the District Bites and Brew. They're coming up to open as soon as this week in the Old Pueblo. You're listening to Grant Kruger on 1030 AM The Voice, your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger. Every weekday, 7 to 9 AM, you get The Morning Voice. On Mondays, you've got Miss Lydia Arenda. Tuesdays, Ted Maxwell from the Southern Arizona Leadership Council and his engagement hour. On Wednesdays, you get me talking about the intersection of local business, restaurants, and politics. On Thursdays and tomorrow, you've got Tom Moulton from the Southern Arizona Attractions Alliance. And on Friday,
he'll be from the fair tomorrow.
Live
from the Pima County Fair.
Wow, live from the fair.
They're going to put him on a ride for 2 hours. And we're going to see how he holds up. It's going to be a test for him.
Do they still do those like rotor rides, like the one that would spin you around when I was a child and everybody would puke on? Like,
gonna,
or did they finally take that off the
we're
market?
Gonna get him, we're going to get him stuffed with a lot of, you know, deep fried chocolate bars and whatever else they serve up these days and some Piggly Wiggly fries and some dough bread and then throw him on a ride that spins for about 45 minutes.
So tomorrow on The Morning Voice, we're going to test the lower intestinal fortitude of Tom Moulton from the Southern Arizona Attractions
Alliance. I know he can
Alliance.
Do it. I have faith in
Si se puede, Tom, you got this.
I have faith in Tom.
And then on Fridays, you've got Dr. Ed Ackerley bringing you all kinds of neat things from the University of Arizona. This is The Morning Voice. Tomorrow at 5:30 at Proof Artisanal Pizza and Pasta, if you want to meet us, have a cocktail with us in some capacity, or perhaps throw an egg at us, you know, you can come visit
if you
us.
Can afford it.
If you can afford to throw an egg at us over here, we'd like your advertising dollars on The Morning Voice. But you can meet us at 5:30 p.m. Proof Artisanal Pizza and Pasta. That's 4340 North Campbell Avenue, the southeast corner of River and Campbell. But we are live in the KVUI studios with another budding young restaurant tour over here. Mr. Gabe Cordova. Gabe's opening up the District Bites and Brews as soon as possibly this weekend, Gabe? Where are we looking at here?
Oh, before I go through this, I have to say this. The Gravitron ride is what you're talking about. And there was one for sale on Facebook Marketplace. I had to say that. So you can purchase one yourself.
Could I put a Gravitron in St. Philip's Plaza?
Oh, now we're talking business. All right, I'm moving to St. Philip's Plaza.
Let's go. This would be great.
Okay, Gravitron aside. Yes, we are hoping to have our soft opening Wednesday, next Wednesday. Granted, the inspection and everything goes well. And that's kind of the tentative date. But as you know, things change, things move. So next Wednesday is our hopeful soft opening date.
That's not too far away. So it's basically 1 week from today right now for a soft opening. Now, we've talked about this on the show before about why restaurants need to do a soft opening. How long of a soft opening are you going to do and what's that going to entail?
I'll give you guys my whole layout of what we're planning here. We are going to do something special for the vendors and all the people that kind of helped us. And let me just give a quick shout out to Tracy, Ryan, and Chi. These guys are partners. And it has really just been all of us putting our heart and soul into that building. We had one gentleman come in and help us knock a wall down. But other than that, these guys have really put in a lot of time and a lot of work. So shout out to those guys. Now, in terms of our opening, we're looking to do a friends and family for all the vendors and all the people that kind of helped us out. I don't want to give that date out. We're going to keep it kind of secretive. But Wednesday, we'll do our soft opening. We're going to run that for about 3 to 4 weeks. And the reason being for that is because our staff, although we have some pretty experienced staff, bartenders, servers, and cooks, we want to give us time to kind of gain our bearings, figure out our system, what works, what doesn't. You know, we don't want to open up on, well, we will be open and hopefully on Cinco de Mayo weekend, but we don't want to full forward blast the kitchen and just, you know, drown us right away. So we're going to give ourselves about 4 weeks to kind of figure it out. 4 weeks from then, we will have our grand opening. We'll invite everybody on in and kind of see what we're working with.
So you're looking at like a grand opening right around Memorial Day weekend or so. So you're kind of missing restaurant season over here, as we say,
yes,
right? Because
yes,
the season kind of ends for us right around that time. So you're opening almost right at the beginning of summer. Was that planned on purpose or was this just construction timing?
It was kind of planned, and I'll give you guys my little secret here. We were really hoping to be open February, April, and obviously things get pushed back and things of that sort, but we were kind of already eyeballing to be open towards the end of restaurant season. Again, we don't want to be during like balls of the wall. Sorry, I don't know if I can say that. Fast-paced season where we're just getting drowned. So the summer is going to really give us the ability to kind of figure out, you know, how our system's going to work, tweak our menus, and then we should be good to go by the time fall comes around and the holiday season.
Sure, it's no easy feat to get something like this started. I always say that a restaurant needs about 60 days of operating days, that is like shifts, to really get their sea legs and start to get their bearings and understand what's going on. Because no matter how well you plan, no matter how well you laid out the dining room, no matter how well you laid out the kitchen, there's always going to be things that just either don't sell or ergonomically are a mess, or it works great when you make one of, but when you try to make 10 of them quickly, it doesn't work. And you've always got to have the ability to pivot and change. And while certainly we all love new restaurant openings, who doesn't want to post on social media, check me out at the new latest, greatest, hottest place over there? It can be a little rough that first month or two.
Yes, 100%. And you know, with our menu, we started really simple. And we talked a little bit about it on the break. You know, our menu is going to be very simplistic. American Eats. We have some really cool twists on some burgers that we're doing. And again, we're keeping it very simple, very consistent. We're really pushing on the ambience and a place like kind of like the Cheers Bar. Everyone knows your name. We want to be that on Campbell Avenue. We want to be that small local place. Now, the surrounding neighborhood has, not only for us, but obviously for the pastiche, they've been very supportive with us. So we are going to allow the community to kind of grow or allow us to be what they want us to be later down the road. And I'd really love to dig a lot deeper on the culinary side. I'd really love to collaborate with some restaurants on here. I really think that's kind of the future of being able to say, hey, this local restaurant teamed up. They did something really cool. And, I don't know. That's kind of my vision. Don't know what it's going to go to now, but you know, hopefully in the future we'll get that going.
Well, I see a lot of collabs happen between the liquor companies, for example, the guys that are making their own wines, the guys that are making their own beers. You going to carry some local beers on tap?
We had to have the Barrio. We definitely got the Barrio in there. We got the Dragoon. What we're hoping to do is we got about 9 beers on draft right now. We have 16 taps available. So again, we kind of want to grow into it slowly. I don't want a bunch of just, you know, 1964 special German beer that no one's drinking, just sitting in the keg. But we do want to kind of take a little bit of the page out of tap and bottle, have maybe a grab and go fridge with a little bit more specialty beers. So we can kind of grab those more local beers and things of that sort to support, you know, the local community.
Do you have that liquor license right now to do the to-go alcohol?
We don't, not yet. I believe they were talking something that I would have to pay a certain amount of fee on top of our 12.
Correct. So in the last couple of years, restaurants have had a change in the law, and I was actually helped create this law and testified in front of the House and Senate in the state of Arizona on this rule. Remember during COVID when restaurants had that ability to sell cocktails to go for a while, and we all sort of enjoyed that privilege? Well, that got taken away because there were some ways about an executive order and some challenges about how that was administered. And so we came back the next year and helped create a House bill and eventually a law where restaurants can rent from a Series 6 bar license, for those listening over there, they can rent the to-go privileges. So essentially the bar would no longer be able to sell to-go, but the restaurant could then do that and have, say, a grab-and-go fridge in some capacity. Now, the amount you pay for that depends. It's between you and that bar. I rented, for example, the Mavericks to-go license to Union Public House so that we can now sell packaged liquor to-go out of Union. Because who is buying packaged liquor to-go out of the Maverick at 2 o'clock in the morning? 1:45, let's say, because 2 is the cutoff time. So nobody was buying it at 2, Arizona Liquor Department.
Trick question.
But at 1:45 in the morning, you're only getting people buying the booze to go for all the wrong reasons, as you can imagine, sales you don't want to do. And so we were able to successfully do it, and hundreds of other restaurants throughout the state of Arizona are doing that now as well, too. And so you can either pair up with a Series 6, or you can ask the state government to pair up for you in sort of a Tinder of restaurants and bars meeting together to do that. So you can get those privileges.
Oh, wow. No, that would be something that we would definitely want to do. And you know, in touching base on COVID, you know, that was one of those things that really changed the restaurant game in general. And it really opened my eyes. And that's kind of what made us, you know, want to open the restaurant, to where, you know, we had the shutdown, we had the closings, and then we eventually got the to-go food and whatnot. And I found that people weren't necessarily just missing the food. They were missing the community. They were missing walking into Union Public House and seeing Grant in the corner or their favorite bartender or whatnot. So, you know, talking about COVID, that was kind of one of the big things that said, hey man, you know, there's a lot more to the restaurant business than just selling food.
Without a doubt. Well, we're going to take a quick break over here from Gabe Cordova. We were talking restaurants and COVID over here. Gabe owns a gym. He now owns a restaurant. He's going to have to open up a cruise ship, I think, to get the holy triumvirate of COVID shutdown businesses. We've got one more segment with Gabe Cordova from the district coming up after the break. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Grant Kruger, joined live with Gabe Cordova, operating partner of the District Bites and Brews, opening up with a soft opening as soon as next Wednesday, barring inspections over here. So Gabe is going through one of, I think, the toughest parts of the restaurant business, those couple of weeks right before open, because man, could there be any more work to fit under your plate, right? There's government inspections, there's hiring and training all the employees, it's getting all the drops of food and all the drops of liquor and just going through the entire permitting process. How are you holding up, my man?
I'm still alive. You know, it's crazy that you asked me that question right now. I got home last night, taking my contacts out. I don't know. I kind of just blurred out, went to sleep, and I woke up this morning, and I guess I just threw my contacts in the sink. So hence why I'm wearing my glasses today. I think I'm a little bit tired, but I'm making through it.
It is no easy feat. I salute you for even just taking the leap over here. And I love to help out fellow local restaurateurs that are going through this process as well, too, because it is such a grind to get something like this off the ground. One of the neat parts about it, though, is that local restaurants can, in fact, compete with the chains. This is one of the few industries left in the world, and in my opinion, Gabe, that we can compete against the Olive Gardens, against the Texas Roadhouses, because you can create a menu that's local for locals, right? You can really distill your menu down to exactly what people want in the 520, whereas if you're Olive Garden, you make a menu that's got to work in Maine just as it does in Tempe, just as it does in Portland, Oregon, and as such, it tends to be a little watered down. What are some of your favorite local restaurants? Like, where do you and Tracy go for date night over here? What are your jams for local faves?
You know, I'm a big avid goer of anywhere really downtown. One of my favorite spots that I go quite a bit is Tesoro's. They just opened up in the new Mimi's Cafe location. Phenomenal shout out to Angel and Jose down there. I am a big fan of Bata. I got to say, I like to go down to Bata. The hub is phenomenal. I'm a foodie. So anywhere I go, I think I'm going to find something that I like. So
we've got a tremendous restaurant scene, certainly downtown over there. I mean, there's, you can't, you know, walk a half a block without having five or six local restaurants over there waiting to receive and experience you.
No, 100%. It's, you know, let me throw out Empire as well. That Elote Pizza is phenomenal. And I just love going to these restaurants and just seeing these chefs and what they're doing, the dishes. And like you said, there's just so much more attention to detail that local businesses and restaurants can give to our community versus, like you said, an Olive Garden that has to appeal to Maine and, you know, Wyoming or something like that. So there very much is something special in those local restaurants when you visit them. And there's a lot of heart and soul going into that. I promise you that. Going through, you know, like you said, just getting the liquor and all these little fine details, and then having enough, you know, motivation to go in there and just give the love to that food and that environment that you're creating. There's definitely something special to be said about that.
What's your favorite dish you think coming up on the district's menu right now? Like, what's the jam over there that people should go for in the next couple of weeks when they get to experience your food and service?
There's three things that stick out to me in my menu. We have the Santa Fe egg rolls that are pretty phenomenal. That's kind of my go-to appetizer. We have some really cool artisan flatbreads that we're pulling out, a Caprese flatbread. That is phenomenal. And one of our kind of main go-tos is going to be our Surf and Turf burger. Comes with a side of bone marrow. We have a blackened grilled shrimp on top of it, things of that sort. So look out for those. Those are going to be pretty solid.
Those sound phenomenal. Now, you own a gym as well, too, you were saying. So are you going to do any sort of collab with the gym? Is there any sort of meal prep or meal planning ideas or something along those lines?
So we've spoken really closely with our food vendor, Shamrock Farms. We're not going to change anything for 60 days. We're going to get rocking. But eventually, I do want to do something for the fitness community, something meal preppy. We're going to definitely have discounts for our Shark Sports members, as well as the Gelish Nail Salon that we have, a little discount for them as well. So we're going to try to incorporate all three businesses, kind of keep it like a little community and go from there.
That sounds pretty cool. So you could come in for happy hour, have an adult beverage or two, then go get your nails done?
And as soon as you get a few extra pounds from a restaurant, you can come down to the gym and we'll work it off.
I love it. That's a great symbiotic relationship over there indeed. So speaking of happy hour, Tucson loves a good happy hour. Have you guys come up yet with your hours for specials like this? Are you going to do a happy hour?
Yeah, we are actually going to do happy hour. Happy hour at the district is going to be running from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. Dollar off all of drafts. Again, this is our very starting happy hour. We're going to really build on top of it. But that's about it for now.
All right. So 3 hours of happy hour over at the district. Why don't you break it down for our listeners again one more time, where you guys are located? Where can people go find out information about the district, not just now, but in the coming weeks as you guys morph into your full service operating hours?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're in the process of getting our Facebook and our webpage started. So we don't have that just yet. We have been posting our journey of construction and everything that's going on our Instagram. That's the District 520. You can find us on Instagram there. In terms of our location, we're in the legacy building that was once Pastiche, located in the Chipotle Gelish Nail Salon right there, cross streets of Campbell and Fort Lowell. You can't miss it, right across from Beyond Bread.
Is there a name for that shopping center, or is it just the Chipotle Gelish Mauricio Fregoso Center?
I just name off all the businesses in there and call it that shopping. I believe it's the Campbell Shopping Plaza in general. I should probably figure that out a little bit better, but that's essentially where it is, right there across from Beyond Bread.
Campbell Shopping Center across from Beyond Bread over there. The District Bites and Brews a week away from opening over here right now. Pretty exciting times for you guys. And I really appreciate you guys like taking the entrepreneurial gamble to get this thing going. How many employees do you think you're going to have from the start?
I think we're going to start off with about 15, 16 employees, start off small. The one thing that we didn't want to do is overstaff. We want to make sure that our staff is making money, getting hours. We want to make sure there's enough work. So as soon as we start seeing what our, you know, flow is going to be, I truly, truly see us hiring a substantial more people as we figure out what we're going to be doing.
Love it. Well, it's been an enjoyable hour with Mr. Gabe Cordova from the District Bites and Brew. Thank you, Gabe, for joining us in the KVY studios this morning.
Thank you, guys. I really appreciate you having us. Come on, see us hopefully next Wednesday at the District, Campbell Avenue. We'll see you there.
Love it. You're listening to Grant Kruger on The Morning Voice, 10:30 a.m. Don't go anywhere. We got another hour of food and talk and fun coming up. Welcome back to Hour 2 of The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Grant Kruger. So many cool things happening in the Old Pueblo this weekend. As we were talking about at the top of the hour, this is kind of starting to be the highest of high season over here, right? Where that weather is absolutely glorious to sit outside. And not just sit outside, but sit outside at the time of day that you want to be outside at a restaurant, right? I love great weather at 3 p.m., but I don't really need the patio capacity at 3 p.m. I need it at 7 p.m. when everyone's going out to dinner. And so that happens right around this time of the year. And if you look at your calendar for what's going on this weekend in Tucson, it is absolutely jam-packed. I don't think I've seen a day as busy with as many events as this Saturday, April 26th, as in the entire calendar year, quite frankly, looking at that. And so we're going to talk about just a number of the cool things that are going on for you in the Old Pueblo over here. Of course, first and foremost, do pay attention to those Tucson Roadrunners. Again, repeating, they are in the Calder Cup playoffs tonight, tomorrow, and possibly in a deciding Game 3 Saturday against the evil Abbotsford Canucks. Really excited for that one on AHL TV. We'll get a home playoff game on May 2nd and 4th after we win that series. And so that would be really neat to have AHL playoffs coming to the Old Pueblo. So do root for those Roadrunners, right? Mr. Bob Hoffman, the president of the team, is quite a regular over here on The Morning Voice with us. And so we are pimps for the puck on The Morning Voice. Happy to support the Tucson Roadrunners. But if you're not down with that one, if you've got plans on Friday where the Roadrunners are, you know, taking a break and not having action because we'll probably just win these first two games either way and sweep that series, Midland is playing at the Tucson Arena on Friday, right?
Really?
Yes. And so country band Midland, right? Mark Weistrack, the lead singer, his parents owned the Stakeout in Sonoyta. They used to have one in Marana for many years as well, too. So there's a little restaurant tie into Midland is playing Friday to begin with. But there's more. If you didn't want to see Midland on Friday, you could go to the Pima County Fair and see Exhibit is playing, R&B star Exhibit. So on the same day, you've got two pretty major concerts. And that's just Friday, right? Like, there's more coming up to that one as well, too. They've got former popular alternative metal band Seven Dust playing on Friday as well at the Pima County Fair. On Saturday, they've got country band The Brothers Osborne. And so that's going to be a big draw. Like, on Saturday, that's going to certainly take away a little bit from our Maverick over here. But if you weren't thinking that there was enough going on that Saturday, there's more. The Rito Downs has the Taco Fest going on over there.
Oh, my goodness.
And so that's headliner T.I. That group is the same group that's putting on the Taco Fest, also puts on Boots in the Park. You've probably heard of that country concert series. And so they're bringing a concert to the Rito Downs this Saturday as well, too, on the 26th. Now, I'm always excited for stuff going on at the Rito Downs. On a little bit of local news, the RFP, request for production for establishments or entities looking to revive the Rito Downs, those applications are due this week to Pima County as well, too. So we're sort of eagerly awaiting the news on who's going to step up and potentially run that park so that it can have horse racing as early as spring of 2026. So about 10 months from now would be about the earliest window they could do that. There was a meeting a couple of weeks ago, a mandatory walkthrough at the Rito. I went, right, just to bring you that local news and see who was interested in there. And let's just say there happened to be a former guest of Chris DeSimone in the mornings over here on Mondays talking about Board of Supervisors meetings regularly that is interested in a group that to potentially participate in that. And there's an out-of-state group that runs horse racing as well, too, that happened to be present. And not a whole lot of other action. So we're going to see if one of these two groups has actually stepped up and fills out that RFP and becomes the next three-year deal for horse racing at the Rito Park. We're hoping to see a collaboration with the Tucson Conquistadors and do another concert over there next year with respect to the golf tournament, the PGA golf tournament that will be happening in mid-March next year. And just this weekend, that grounds are going to be used for a Taco Fest featuring R&B star T.I. and many others as well, too. Now, just in case you didn't also have other plans on Saturday the 26th, there's more. The Centurions are doing their event at Keno Park. And so, you know, both existing soccer field public use concert / baseball stadium / sports multi-use sports facilities are going to be rocking as the Centurions bring you Yachtly Crew and the Bare Naked Ladies. I am a big fan of Yachtly Crew. We talked about this last week.
Saw them a couple months ago when they came through town.
Yeah,
they're very good.
Yeah, they came through and played the Rialto.
The Rialto, yeah.
We've actually had Yachtly Crew play St. Philip's Plaza as well, too, with a really fun show a couple years ago. Think Five Guys in, you know, dressed like the skipper from Gilligan's Island, you know, the white blazers with the gold buttons and the
epaulettes.
Yeah, I mean, it's
captain's hat.
Yes, it's everything you could expect from a yacht rock special over there. And it's really a well done performance. Like, this is a fun, fun band. And that's just the opener for the Centurions event, right? They've got Canadian rock stars, the Bare Naked Ladies, coming up after that one. So Yachtly Crew opening for the Bare Naked Ladies. And that's also this Saturday in the Old Pueblo. So it's pretty neat to see this many things going on all at the same time. Like, there is really going to be a lot to do outside in Tucson. And it's not shocking because, again, this is the time of year that at 7, 8, 9 p.m., like, it is absolutely perfect to be outside. And all these outdoor event planners cherry pick these days, months and months and months, or perhaps years in advance, to schedule their concerts. After that, we get into our high restaurant season. Not a lot of news of openings and closings that happen right around this time of year, because even if you were thinking about closing in some capacity, you're probably hanging on to see what graduation weekend, Mother's Day, and these things sort of work your way through. But there is an announcement that Wok and Fire Grill, which is located at 1135 North Park Avenue, they are a Vietnamese restaurant that is essentially Speedway and Park. They're announcing their closing. Their last day is going to be this Sunday, April 27th. So I'm really sad to bring you that news over there. Obviously, you know, they probably live and die by the university. And again, right when you get to the end of university season, they've decided to close their restaurant after 6 years in business. And so that's a pretty sad news to bring you. And especially when they didn't even quite make it through the peak part of our season over here, like a real bummer to announce some restaurant closures. We'll probably have a few more popping up, though, by mid-May, as that happens to be the time of year that if you haven't had a good season from October to May, the rest of summer isn't always looking that great for you either. And so we may have some additional closures coming up in just the next few weeks, bringing you that hot restaurant gossip, right? If it bleeds, it leads. And so that always tends to be a story in food news openings and closings. Other stories we have made the New York Times this week on the 21st on the digital edition of the New York Times. A whole host of local Tucson restaurants received a fair bit of accolades on a Times article about visiting Tucson. I don't know what it is about the New York Times that seems to cover Tucson almost like biannually here, man. I feel
it
like
sure does, yeah.
I feel like they cover us an awful lot. Is this just like for East Coast visitors to come? Like, why do we get so much attention from the Times?
Yeah, we don't have a nonstop flight. Go figure.
Yeah, we did for a while over there, right? We were subsidizing that JetBlue flight, and we don't, which is really unfortunate because I would love to see more affluent East Coast tourism make their way to the Old Pueblo. But for whatever reason, the New York Times continues to cover us. They love our cool downtown hipster joints. And if you take a look at the Times, you can see a cool article mentioning over 20 Tucson stops, restaurants, local bars, breweries, and cafes and whatnot. So it's cool to see, you know, a little bit of sunshine on the Old Pueblo over here as well, too. But we're going to bring more local restaurant news and talk, because when we come back after the break, I'm going to bring in an operator that's one of my favorite over here in the Old Pueblo, coming out of the Scordato's family history, right? We talk about Vivace and Scordato's a lot on Wake Up Tucson. I've talked about it on Jump in Tucson.
Paterfamilias, yes.
Right. I mean, you're talking about a group that has, and a family that has absolutely done it right in Tucson for decades, more than five decades in the Old Pueblo. And like, you make it five decades in the restaurant, but you're more than the Hall of Fame. You're in the pantheon, the upper end of restaurants over here. We're going to get Justin Fitzsimmons in studio. He's the operating partner of Uptown Burger, the nephew of Dan Scordato over here. And so he's got a great, great burger concept located at Sunrise and Campbell, right in that southeast corner of Sunrise and Campbell, the same shopping center where Fleming's is and the CVS is over there. They just opened up a BFT Fitness in that place as well, too. And so that's a great little shopping center. That restaurant's had some challenges and had a few turnovers in that case, but we've got the Scordato / Fitzsimmons family running it, and we're going to bring up Justin Fitzsimmons after the break to talk about all things Uptown Burger, one of my favorite burger joints in the old Pueblo. We'll take a quick break over here, and Justin Fitzsimmons coming up after the break. You're listening to Grant Kruger on The Morning Voice, 10:30 a.m., your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Grant Kruger. I am very excited this morning to have one of my favorite restaurateurs in the old Pueblo, Mr. Justin Fitzsimmons from Uptown Burger here in the KVUI studios. Welcome, Justin.
Thank you.
Very excited to have you here today. You guys do an absolutely phenomenal job with Uptown Burger. But before we tear into that, why don't you break down for us a little bit about your career path and history? How'd you get to where you're at in the restaurant business today?
Let's see. I started when I was, it's quite a while ago, actually. I started actually just basically my entire family has been in the restaurant business for.
Of course, Scordato's, right? On West Speedway, infamously, yep. for almost like four decades.
Yeah. I mean, not anymore on West
Speedway. Well, yes, but, of course. But right. But then, you know, this turned into Scordato's on Broadway, and this turned into Scordato's on Tanga Verde, and this turned into what was Daniel's in St. Philip's Plaza, right?
Which
is now Union Public House, and then eventually into Vivace as well, too. Yep. So how's it like working with Dan Scordato?
Oh, it's great. Great. It's awesome. You know, he was a mentor to me in many ways, kind of showed me the ropes of the restaurant business, got me started in it. Originally, I'm from Portland, Oregon, so I did had nothing to do with the restaurant industry my whole life. I would visit him here in Tucson growing up, and he was always very generous with my mom and my brother and I when we'd come down and visit. And he just lived this really glamorous, cool lifestyle, and you know, his food was awesome. And you know, from there, but I didn't think I was ever going to work in the business, and then. After high school and lots of years in rainy Portland, he lured me down here to check out a restaurant that he was opening up. And I figured after, you know, a couple of years and at Portland State University, I said, oh, just try it out. And yeah, fell in love with the business from there.
The restaurant business hooks you. That's kind of how it gets you in.
I know, it's great.
So when we met, you were working for Scordato's Pizzeria. There was Vivace, right? And there was Pizzeria Vivace because they couldn't even call it Scordato's at that point. There was a trademark issue with the name, if I recall correctly.
That is correct, yes. And I'm sure Dan would take credit for it, but I did mention to him, I'm like, hey, do you ever thought about changing? Because he was complaining a lot about everyone getting confused. Both restaurants confused because they're both Vivace, right? And they're right next to each other.
Yeah, Vivace and Pizzeria Vivace, both in the St. Philip's Plaza at that time as well, too. I could see that creating some issues for reservations, to-go orders.
Or just everything. It was really bad.
Understood.
Yeah, I mean, it was good, the recognition, but at the same time, everyone, if they were looking for one or the other, it'd end up at the wrong place, and yeah, it would just be a cluster, you know what?
One of the things I remembered most about that one was it was the great artisanal pizza that you guys were making and how you weren't selling it to go at that time, which really chapped the khakis of a lot of pizza fans because they didn't understand the difference between a pizza made with real fresh dough and non-chemically treated mozzarella and whatnot, like wouldn't hold so well in a to-go box.
Right.
And so here, you know, Dan Scordato, a famous Tucson restaurateur, and he's got this pizzeria and you're running it, right?
Like
you're running the show over there and you guys wouldn't sell pizza to go.
I know. That was really, I mean, it did piss a lot of people off for sure.
Without a doubt.
Yeah. But no, eventually we did. But it did not hold up. We had to change some things with the, we made it more Neapolitan style at first, and Neapolitan pizza is just really bad to go. So
right. And for those that are listening, Neapolitan style pizza is made with a very specific type of dry flour, and it's cooked in an 800 degree deck oven and get up to about 925 or so at the very top of that oven. And those pizzas cook quick,
Fast,
like a minute and a half, right? Like it's one turn with the pizza peel and that's it. So, I mean, you've got to be a really skilled operator to cook a pizza that way and not burn one side and get it right. And it's this dry, like, you know, very thin crust pizza, but it doesn't hold up well steaming out into go box. You know, 15, 20 minutes later, it's not so great. It's my favorite style of pizza personally, but it also is not that great to go.
No, it's not.
And so that was a real challenge for you guys. And that must have been a challenge working with your uncle as well too, right? Yeah. The family business certainly creates its own challenges.
It does, yes.
And so Dan has had a couple of satellite restaurants before in the past outside of Ivachi, and always sort of returns back to his core in what's considered one of Tucson's most famous and well-known best executed restaurants. But ever since he's had you by his side over here, he's been a little braver to help team up and work on this concept now across the street from Ivachi, located on Sunrise and Campbell.
That's
Why don't you tell us about the location of Uptown Burger and that selection choice?
Yeah, so it is across the street, as you know, Dan likes to do, is have his restaurants close to his big, you know, mothership, which is Ivachi. It's the Paloma Village Uptown Burger. We've been open for just over 2 years now, which feels like it was just yesterday. But
time flies when you're having fun, right?
Oh, I mean, absolutely. What more can you- So yeah, no, it's a really cool concept. We have a quality of beef that is very unique to anywhere, let alone here in Tucson. It's a Piedmontese cow, which is originates from the Piedmontese region of Italy. When I lived in Italy a long time ago, it is a very unique makeup of how the cow itself it's a very what's the word for it. It's almost like a mutation, which makes it very similar to like a Kobe style beef.
Nice.
As far as its texture, but it's a lot more lean. It's not going to be as fatty as the...
Does any other burger place in town use this style of beef, Justin?
Not that I know of, no.
So you guys are unique in this. This is like a very specific uptown product that you could only get up at your store.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's something I tried a while. I mean, obviously I tried it when I was in Italy and I was just like, wow, this is the best steak and beef product I've ever had, even better than Wagyu in my opinion, because it had better flavor. But I didn't think it would ever be available in the United States. And when I was doing actually that Omelure place, when
that was in St. Phil's Plaza just for a while,
for a hot minute, I somehow came across it and found it was had been brought to Nebraska, and they did like a hybrid there. Anyway, so. Yeah, we're getting that there at Uptown Burger, and it's an 8 ounce patty, or you get 2 4 ounce patties for like a medium well burger, and they are, it's great.
It's pretty cool that you found a way to differentiate yourself in the burger market. You're talking about something that in the restaurant world is often treated as like a commodity, right? Yeah. Unfortunately, there are very few restaurants in Tucson that can even get by without having a burger on the menu, you know? Like, there's a lot of people that are in Tucson, and this isn't a knock, but that must be unimagined enough that you've got to have a burger even in your Mexican restaurants, even in Italian restaurants. And so you guys have decided to do your own spin that's actually a really unique and great, great burger product. Like, I'm a big fan of Uptown Burger.
Thank you.
And so I'm really excited to have you guys here today and talk about that.
Yeah, excellent.
So I've noticed some changes in Uptown, though, as I've gone since you've opened over the last couple of years, in that balance between it being full service and counter service as well, too. Like, where are you guys at with that one right now?
We're doing full service. There was a high demand for that, especially in our demographic. The counter service, honestly, it's easier for the operator to have, you know, the ability not to have the whole full service thing
in a restaurant.
I mean, that's why there are so many of the bigger restaurants we all know about that are successful that do the quick service, fast you know.
The world is seemingly moving to that right now. And it has a lot to do with minimum wage, right? Like when you make this server minimum wage as high as it is in the state of Arizona, we currently have the sixth highest server wage in the country, eighth highest minimum wage in the entire country. So it makes it tough to do full service restaurants because the cost just can go through the roof. So you're talking about full service with this Piedmontese beef as well, too. So it's like cost on top of cost. How do you manage costs in Uptown Burger to make it as affordable and accessible as you do?
Streamlining labor, mainly. That's the hardest, you know, part.
Is that you doing all the work over there? Is that what you're saying in a sort of cryptic message over here?
Yes. I have some great staff members, and we're very fortunate to have the people we have. But yes, it is a challenging, it's a fine line. And you do have to make up for a lot of the hours, especially if there's slower moments in the restaurant. You gotta figure out a schedule where you don't have excess labor in those times, especially if you have a high, quality food product like the Piedmontese beef.
No, and you always have. Having followed your restaurant arc, one of the things I've always admired about you is your ability as a chef, your commitment to quality ingredients, and really putting out something that's awesome on the plate. Like the focus of your restaurants has always been food-centric, like food-forward sort of thing. And I think that's, you know, has a lot to do with your success.
Thank you. I do have I've worked in restaurants for a long time, aside from the ones that Daniel has done, and some of them were more on the higher end of the spectrum on the culinary scene. And it's kind of embedded in me, just being at those restaurants for as many years as I was in the past. And I just kind of have this, I guess it's an instinct that you just can't put something out that's not as good as it can be. So,
no, of course. I mean, that's one of the things we have to do as local operators to be successful, is give you a really high quality product, because there's a lot of chains out there. There's a lot of QSR places that are bringing you quick and fast. We're seeing it, right? In the market, with all these double drive-through sort of QSR type things popping up everywhere in Tucson. Mm-hmm. You can get a $10 lobster roll sandwich off an app. How does that work? Like, I don't
have any idea.
No. I have no idea myself.
I haven't tried the place yet either. Yeah, I've heard of it.
I was going to ask if that was something you had tried. I've heard of this one too. I've yet to go. We'll have to have a little field trip over here on the Morning Voice and take a stab at what a $10 lobster roll looks like for us. But like this is the new face of restaurants in the labor market that we have today. And I don't necessarily love that. Like, I love full service, and I think you do too.
Yes, I do. And it is I understand why we're not going in that direction, just because of the costs and just because of just the way this whole market's been set up. But yes, I definitely agree.
Well, let's take a quick break. We've got Justin Fitzsimmons from Uptown Burger live in studios. You're listening to Grant Kruger on the Morning Voice, 10:30 a.m. Your home for local news and talk. Good morning and welcome back to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Grant Kruger. Always talking cool restaurant talk over here on The Morning Voice, Wednesdays 7 to 9 a.m. And it couldn't get any cooler than Mr. Justin Fitzsimmons from Uptown Burger and from the Scordato family. He's live in studio. Welcome back, Justin.
Thank you, Grant.
Hey, so we were discussing Uptown Burger and, you know, your relationship to Dan, the Scordatos, like how all this ties together. I understand that you're running Uptown Burger as your own project. Like, you've sort of taken this one over completely from your uncle at this point and are captain of the ship, right?
That is correct, yes.
Dan has taken a little bit of a reprieve to work on a downtown Tucson concept called the Treasury. Tell me a little bit about that one.
Yeah, he has an incredible setup at an old Chase bank. It's off, I can't even
2 East Congress, I believe, is the address.
Oh, like, that's Stone.
A pretty cool address when it's like 2, right? Yeah. it's single digit numbers. Like, that's OG right there.
That's
so
the real deal.
We went there, and I want to hear about it here, but we've actually been there a couple of weeks ago for a wedding. It was nice. Incredibly
it's
nice.
A beautiful space. Justin, you're working over there too? You're helping out?
No. But I did. No. I have visited a couple of times actually this last we did a little walk around, and it's a real incredible setup for sure. He's Dan's very good at aesthetics and making things kind of fit for, you know, his style. And just like this new location, well, I guess not new anymore, but the Skyline and Campbell Vivace, you know.
Sure.
He went in there and he made it his own.
Incredible build out from the Anthony's and the Catalina spaces. Yep. It's basically been a decade up there now for Vice. It's hard to believe that it's been that long, right?
I know,
time flies
crazy.
When we're all having fun over here in the restaurant business.
So
you're captain of the Uptown Burger Ship over here. You're running this one on your own. Are you guys doing any of like the DoorDash, Grubhub, Uber Eats, Postmates to go stuff? Or is this all in-house dining right now?
It's in-house dining right now. We don't have the infrastructure quite set up for a DoorDash operation just because it's a smaller space. And, I'd love to, do some necessary changes right away, but, it's already pretty busy as it is. And just for us to get to the point where we can do something on that scale, it would take a significant increase in storage and just, streamlining the overall operation, which we hope to get to sooner than later, especially I think the summer.
Sure. Summer is always the time we get to work, on the business as opposed to in the business over here.
Sure.
And it's coming up, just about 4 weeks or so.
Crazy.
And the end of Tucson restaurant season will be here and upon us. I think most listeners need to know just how expensive it is to operate on Uber Eats and DoorDash. Like, what do those commission fees look like if you were to choose to do that?
Oh, yeah. They start at 15% to up to almost 30%.
Yeah. Pretty insane,
sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And so we always urge if you're going to come pick up food to go in some capacity, either way, like order it direct through your local restaurant. Cut that middleman right out.
Absolutely.
The average restaurant runs between a 3% and 6% profit margin. A lot of full service restaurants can run low as 1% or 2%.
That's true.
And so when you give 30% to DoorDash, I'm not a math major over here, but what's left for the house?
Not very much. Not very much at all. Yeah.
You're almost doing product like that as a loss leader, as an advertising scheme rather than doing it really for any sort of profit.
Absolutely.
What do you do to keep the quality of like a burger up to go? We talked at the beginning of the hour about Scordato's Pizzeria and not selling this Neapolitan style pizza to go. Like, what can you do to keep a burger fresh and good so that it can live for 15 or 20 minutes and still be the quality that you expect to get an Uptown burger when you go in person?
Yeah, that's a great question, because originally we had a brioche bun that I think was too delicate. And with the container that we had, it would basically, by the time people got home, because we had a huge 8-ounce patty that was,
juicy.
Half a pound. Yeah, absolutely. It's huge. So people go home and they'd be like, well, there's no bun left because all the juices from the burger would just melt into the bottom bun. And it was, it wasn't done the way that people would like it to, as far as taking it to go. So it was hard for us to, have that as a selling point for people. Hey, take it to go. Cause then when they take it home, it wouldn't even be to where they would have it when it was in the restaurant. So we've changed the bun a little bit, so it's a little more firmer, and let the juices kind of sit for a minute with the actual burger itself. And we changed our container to something that's a little more ventilated.
Sure, that porosity makes a big difference.
Big time.
On hot foods like that, when they can vent and let a little steam out of there, as opposed
to
ye old styrofoam clamshell type thing that if not banned by local municipalities right now, should be, just because of the way it treats the food so harshly on a to-go perspective.
Yeah, for sure.
And a lot of it, restaurant food is just meant to be consumed in-house, right?
Like, 100%.
There's certain items that just don't sell well to go. We struggled, even in my own restaurants, when people order a fish and chips or something like that to go. Like, it's just, quite frankly, not that great of a product when it's sitting in the back of someone's Camry for 22 minutes steaming out on the way to your home.
It is. It is definitely a challenging situation. And the problem is, I think that, like we're just talking about, the direction of this, the whole food culinary scene in general is convenience. And that's why companies like DoorDash and Uber Eats are doing so, well. And even people are, in their big restaurants, corporate restaurants, that have a lot less, I guess, what's the word for it? Costs. Or they have, their margins are much better than, say, the local restaurants, because they have restaurants all over the country. They're making it more convenient for people by doing the DoorDash thing because they can afford it more. And it's challenging to keep up with them. But
sure, a lot of app ordering, right? You're seeing more and more of this form of sort of customer recognition and data collection. Can you order Uptown Burger like online in some capacity to go? Like, can I push a button right now today and order Uptown Burger?
Yeah. We have UptownBurgerTucson.com, and we have an online ordering app that you can select, and it's very streamlined. You can just pick whatever menu item you'd like, and it's ready promptly, you know, just the modern technology.
Sure, sure. So now that you're captain of the ship over here, what changes would you like to implement in Uptown Burger?
There are a lot of things I would like to add to Uptown Burger. It's hard when, like I just said, you know, it's a small space there at the Paloma Village that we have there, that we're kind of limited for now until some significant changes need to be made, which, you know, hope maybe can happen this summer. But I'd like to add some more exciting specials to the menu sooner than later with time.
Do you guys have like a happy hour right now?
Not yet.
Okay.
No, not none of the, I've been captain of the ship, so to speak, for about 6 months now. So,
right, yeah. You've got to just get through season right now,
yeah.
and get your.
It was kind of all of a sudden too. It was definitely all of a sudden. It was like, you know, 1 week into November, and Dan's like, you know, your turn.
So, oh, fun!
I was like, oh, great! Right before season starts.
Obviously, this coincides with the Treasury's opening and planning, yes, as well too,
definitely.
Because there's a limited bandwidth, I think, for any local restaurateur about what you can put together and what you can manage. But having, you know, a local operator on site, paying attention to the details, custom tailoring that menu for Tucson makes such a big difference, and it's one of the things that allows us to compete against the chains. No?
Yes, definitely, for sure.
Yeah. So you're thinking of maybe implementing some changes then this summer once we get through season is kind of the game plan right now for Uptown?
That is game plan, yes, for sure.
Is it more burgers? Is it like a bigger menu expansion? Or do you not want to share with the listeners over here yet?
No, I do. No, for sure. I think more burger options, you know, keeping, you know, what's already working, not trying to, you know, change something that's obviously so far been proven as a hit in the local area of the foothills. So maybe more appetizers, a couple more things that are health friendly as well. That's another thing that I'm looking at trying to expand on is our health conscientious items to the menu, and maybe doing some more I wouldn't say vegetarian, but things that are, you know, focusing on being better for you, I guess, in general.
Sure, and we're seeing that even in Tucson, even through the chains popping up, yeah, over here, right? True Food Kitchen has, yeah, opened up across
Sam
the street.
Fox places.
They've opened up a Flower Child. There's a, what's the original Chop Shop place as well, too,
yeah,
that's opened up at Campbell and Glenn. So there are like healthier QSR type options starting to pop up over there so that it isn't just everything fried, right?
Yeah, I know. Even though it's a lot easier and sometimes tastes really good to be all everything fried.
Well, of course. I mean, we're in the business of taste good, right?
Yes,
and that's, I think, always one of the challenges. People over the years have come to me and said, well, why don't you open a health-focused restaurant? You know, we want more healthy options. We had Gabe Cordova on earlier today. They're opening up the District, which was in the former Pastis space, and he owns a gym as well, too. And we were talking about meal prep, yes, and plannings, and could you do this kind of, you know, work out of a kitchen in some capacity. But the thing is, when people go out to eat, they want a treat.
Yes.
They want something that tastes great, something better than what you can make at home. And in fact, I believe Uptown Burger replaced what was goodness, right? A healthy,
yeah,
concept that
true.
Was in there.
That's true.
So basically you replaced healthy with delicious Piedmontese burgers, correct?
Yes, absolutely.
Are you giving the market what they want or telling the market what they want? And I think in this place, you're giving the market what they want,
that's
Justin.
True. That's very true.
Well, let's take a quick break over here. We're going to have one more segment with Justin Fitzsimmons coming up after the break. We're talking Uptown Burger, a great local restaurant. Justin is, of course, working with the Scordato family. Don't go anywhere. We're going to have one more segment. Justin Fitzsimmons, Grant Kruger, 10:30 a.m. The Voice. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. You're joined by Justin Fitzsimmons in the KVI studios, and I am Grant Kruger. We're talking restaurant business over here. Justin is the operator of Uptown Burger. Welcome back, Justin.
Thank you.
Hey, so I was looking at your hours online over here, and I noticed that you guys are open 6 days a week, just like you were at Vivace, and that you close on Sundays.
Yes.
And I've always kind of admired that about Dan, because as a restaurateur, Sundays are generally one of the busier days of the week. The brunch shift is pretty much the busiest of the day shifts of the entire week. And even Sunday night can be a little teethy. And I've asked Dan Scordato about this before and been like, Dan, why do you close on Sundays? Like, what's the deal? And he's like, Grant, I've been in the restaurant business for 50 years of my life. I get one day, I'm taking it. It's Sunday. You guys are doing the same thing over there at Uptown Burger, no?
Yeah, no, that was the way I think actually every restaurant Dan and I have opened has always been Sunday is our day off for sure. And that's just kind of set, you know, it's kind of been the way that he's set it up. And I wasn't going to complain about it. So
no, of course, who doesn't want to have Sunday off absolutely. In some capacity, but also like our, you know, the general public's days off are often Sunday. Our busy work time, right?
Absolutely.
Nights, weekends, and holidays, as I always say, are just part of the fun of the restaurant business. Now that you're in charge of ship, you plan on staying open on Sundays? You're going to keep it that one going and stay closed on Sundays and give yourself one day?
I'm going to stay closed for now, especially because, you know, if my wife's listening, she definitely wants me to stay closed on Sundays.
Yeah, Sarah might have something to say about that one over there as well, too. But there is something to be said, actually, about a local restaurateur closing at least a day of the week, no matter where you choose it to be, because it does give you that opportunity both to, A, have a break, but B, have an opportunity to do those little repairs and fixes that are hard to do when you're open seven days a week.
Yeah, sure.
I know someone that operates Union Public House 7 days a week till 2 o'clock in the morning. Nice. Where do you find time to paint? Where do you find time to do that plumbing repair that you've got to shut the water off to the facility, right? How do you redo your floors? Where do you reupholster? There are just times that are incredibly challenging when you're in 7 day a week place as well too. So
absolutely.
I've always been like a little bit jealous of you guys that are getting that one day off a week, but that's got to come with a big revenue loss too. No?
Huge. Yeah, no, I trust me. Every day I think about, you know, how much more, you know, how much it would help to be open on Sundays, but you know, for sanity purposes and just to keep, you know, the family all happy. Right, for now, we'll stay closed on Sundays.
Understood. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. So where do you guys go on Sunday? Like, where are you and Sarah's favorite local haunts over here? It's a local restaurateur, and you got a date night. Like, where are you guys going?
With two kids, too.
It's with two kids. Yeah, you're not going anywhere. You're getting to-go food, probably, in
usually
some
to-go food, for sure. And it's, if it's not corporate America. You know, there's a couple of sushi places, like we used to go to Sushi on Arkle. That was kind of a go-to for us when we were, you know, had like 30 minutes with a babysitter that would be calling us, you know, panicking to get home as soon as possible with our kids, you know, jumping off the walls and stuff. But we obviously, you know, there's the Long Cantata. There's a lot of cool places there. And, you know, once in a while we'll make it over there and get a bite to eat at one of the Fox restaurants or whatever, but
they do a great job over there as well too. Obviously a big competitor north and Vivace to a certain degree.
Yes indeed. And then there's like the Firebirds place there, and you know, once in a while we just whenever we have a chance. It's just not as easy as it would be if, you know, say we weren't in the restaurant business.
No, of course. Without a doubt. You're not getting Fridays and Saturdays off over here to go off. And it's actually a tough feat to keep the family happy with that one. That trade-off of nights, weekends, and holidays is no easy thing in the restaurant world. So
it is
awful. I give your wife a lot of credit, you know?
Yes.
To both of ours, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And Katarina over here for putting up with our restaurant shenanigans. So break it down one more time for our listeners over here. Where can they find Uptown Burger? Where can they engage with you on social media, websites, the full nine yards?
Yeah. So we are located on Skyline and Campbell. We're in the Paloma Village, right between CVS and Fleming's. You can't miss us. You'll see a, you know, Uptown Burger sign that has a cool little logo that you can see from the street. We're open Monday through Saturday, 11 a.m. to 8 p.m.
Okay.
I think after 8 p.m., really don't do as much business over there in that side of town. I mean, you know, for now. And we have awesome burgers. I mean, probably our second to none, the most unique burger patty you can find in Tucson, and incredible flavor. And uptownburgertucson.com if you want to place an online order, or you can always call in the restaurant, which is 520-638-6182.
Right on. Well, this has been an amazing hour to get to spend to talk to you and get your history and you know, ethos of Uptown Burger over here. One of my favorite burgers in Tucson. I'll have to go visit. Katarina, I have to get back over there and go visit you. It's been a month or two since we've had an opportunity to check out Uptown Burger. But I am absolutely a big fan of all that you and your family has done in the Tucson restaurants and culinary scene. And thank you for spending part of your Wednesday morning with us.
Thank you, Grant. And likewise, by the way.
And thank you, listeners, for spending your Wednesday with us. We're coming back next week, 7 to 9, with all kinds of great local restaurant and food talk on The Morning Voice. Every weekday, 7 to 9 a.m. We've got Kathleen Wynn coming up after the break over here as well, too. It's been an amazing Wednesday morning with you. Go out there and enjoy all those amazing concerts and events that are happening here this weekend in Tucson. There just couldn't be more fun things to do. Keep an eye on those Tucson Roadrunners as we play tonight, 7 p.m. against the evil Abbotsford Canucks. It's been fantastic spending today with you. Thanks for listening. You've been listening to Grant Kruger on The Morning Voice, 10:30 a.m. You're home for local news and talk.